Hey, folks, and welcome to this week's podcast. Today's guest, Carl Blau, hard to describe. And as I suggest in the interview, you just need to go listen to it. He's made over 40 records, and they are a real mixed bag. Some noisy stuff, some songy stuff, some instrumental stuff, some experimental stuff, some dancey stuff. He just has a lot of music in him. So this new record, which is the first one I'd heard, it's called Introducing Carl Blau. And we've been playing it on the show a lot recently, and it just struck a nerve. It's mostly a country covers record, and it's reverent, but it's also contemporary. It's just kind of a neat record, a nice spot to be in. So I was eager to talk to the guy. He's coming to town. He's coming all over the world through America and then to Europe. So check his website, see if he's coming near you. He was an interesting guy, a nice guy. I always like that combination. I hope you'll find it interesting. Check WFMU.org/Michael for the list of upcoming guests. John Doe is going to be on the show. Amy Rigby. I'm working on a couple others, so keep your eyes peeled. Meanwhile, oh, by the way, this is Carl Blau in the background. So here it is, my chat with Carl Blau.
See Barbara Walker, tell her that and stand her own.
All right, there's Carl Blau from the new record called Introducing Carl Blau, and he's on the telephone and joins us. Good morning, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, good.
We've been listening to this record called Introducing Carl Blau for the past few weeks, and it's really beautiful. It's really kind of a perfect record, works as a whole album. It's just really something I've totally gotten into. So congratulations. But it is, about your 40th release. The record called Introducing You is actually your 40th record. So it's a long story, and I'm not sure exactly how we're going to get there. And in some ways, it's a little bit of a disservice to even describe your music, because you sort of just have to listen to it. And I'm urging people to go to your Bandcamp site and just check out. There's over 30 records you can listen to and check out there. So tell me how you started making music. Tell me the beginning.
It's just an obsession, really, in my, even I think pre-teens, just writing songs with my neighbor, Rob Avila. We just wrote tons of, like we just got together and would write songs, never to perform them, but just to, like, and just the, crazy polkas and stuff. We didn't care. It was just, like, wanted to just, like, try stuff out, and I just, that just never changed. I just kept kind of whatever seemed interesting at the moment, I would just pursue to the nth degree if I could. So it started early, and it's the obsession has never really stopped of writing songs. But when I found recording, it kind of even got crazier, because I found out you could write songs while you're recording, which was really fun. I made more than half my music is just going to the machine, the four track, and just like, what do you have for me today?
Just an instant song.
Yeah. Just a room with instruments in it. And yeah, my parents met in high school band, and we were, us four boys of theirs were forced piano lessons among other musical lessons. So I was like, as soon as I stopped piano, my mom's like, well, what are you going to take now? You got to have something. And so I moved to guitar, and of course it's got to be classical guitar. And so my roots are very kind of structured as well of understanding of music. And then it's just how to break all the rules after that.
Hmm. The stuff on these records is really all over the place. And some of it is sort of more traditional song structured, and some of it is, I don't know, moaning or, more ambient or,
oh, yeah,
polka-y, reggae-y, experimental-y, just all over the map. Is it, I'm picturing you're like drunk and it's 4 a.m. What is the, how are these, you know, on some of them, you know, is that how these were made or?
Well, I just like, there's something about just joy in music that I'm pursuing and it's in art really that it's difficult. It's really, it's hard to pin down. So you kind of have to go a little too far maybe to figure out where that line is of making something joyous without being revolting. I've definitely stepped across the line, you know. But it's all in the pursuit of that, I think, of joy and self pleasuring with the whole process.
I know that you have, or you had, or maybe you still have, you can tell us, a subscription model where you were sort of sending out these recordings on a regular basis to people. Are you still doing it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm not taking any more subscriptions. I'm just trying to finish what I've started, which was like 5 years ago now, almost. That I restarted it. And I'm just way behind. I mean, I've only done 3 albums out of 10. That I've sort of promised, or 12, maybe. I'm going up to number 42 anyway with the subscription. And I just, it's taken me so long, I just sort of closed the door.
Because you owe people
right,
8 or 9 more records.
Like, there's still another 10 albums that I need to get out to people. And it's just, so it's tricky. It's just like, I mean, I'm one of those, I have a family and just a massive struggle of hand to mouth struggle of keeping the roof over and everyone fed, and just it's been tough. So I just it took the back seat over just having a day job for a while. And so,
what kind of a day job do you have?
Well, I'm in between touring right now, so I'm actually unemployed right now, which is sort of been a problem, and I'm trying to figure out another job, but it doesn't matter because I leave in like a week for the next tour. So, but I've been, last job I had was City Beautification for Anacortes, Washington. So just weeding and mowing the city parks, which is a great job, like a good physical, good like anecdote to, you know, the music life, but then it's just pays terribly, so. but they're kind of run by ex-punks, touring musicians, so they let me go tour, and I can have a job generally when I come back, but it's just not, it's an off-season now, so.
So when you're making these records with your brothers and your neighbor, and you started to sort of record it and decide, I'm going to start putting it out, what was the first thing you did to try to get people to listen to it?
I mean, well, I was fortunate enough to be in Anacortes around the time when I was making tapes in, you know, the early 90s, mid-90s, where it was like, that was the medium we were sharing music on at the time. So we had this little collective called Know Your Own, which was started by Brett Lunsford of Be Happening, the guitar player. And he and Phil Elverum and of Mount Erie Microphones, and me and Nate Ashley, Dave Mathis, a bunch of other guys. It was just basically like a town documentary label. Like anyone in town could. It was pretty open. You could put the stamp on your tape if you wanted to, or your CDR or whatever it is. And we didn't do much pressing of vinyls. Like, not really. I don't think we did any vinyls except for maybe like a 7-inch or two. And, but we'd have these tapes we put together and just kind of share around, and they'd get a little, you know, we'd send them to blogs at the time, which was whatever magazines, like local, like small print and stuff. And yeah, we just, it was just fun to get together with others and just sort of ratchet up, you know, the musical side and Nate put out a tape, I gotta get mine out, you know, like, so it was that kind of camaraderie.
And who was buying these things?
I mean, it wasn't like we didn't do it to sell them, but who was buying? I mean, they were available at the local record store in Anacortes. That's where the hub of the was at the business, which was the local, is still the local record store since the 70s. and Brett owned the business, and so, and he was just like, kids, you know, there's a copy machine in the back, this is what a zine is, and there's an 8-track reel-to-reel recorder you could use whenever you want, and basically, so he really just got us curious about, and also, like, he had been touring, which was just seemed like the unicorn of the music industry. Like, how do you tour, you know? And Brett had that experience, so he encouraged us to go out, take our music out there. So that was a big deal at the time.
So tell me how things grew and how people found you and what they thought.
I just kept going out and touring and playing shows, and I just relentlessly did under the radar tours where I just was, sometimes it was just me and my truck, or I'd get together with a band, make a little band. We'd do these things where the four of us would be songwriters and we'd each back each other up for tours and have like a little variety show. And I don't know, I mean, I played with Laura Veers for years. I was like a backing musician for her. She came into the business, that's where I met her. She came into the record store in Anacortes and played a show there, and then we became good friends and bandmates, and I played on all of her records, actually after her first one, and toured with her extensively. And that got me out there too, and I'd be opening up for her, and that's my connection with Bella Union, is through her, and then you know, as soon as I could, I was putting my albums on the Bella Union's desk, and that was, you know, 12 years of doing that before we came together to put out Introducing.
So tell me how you made the step to this record, which is a record, it's such a unique, just sonically unique record, and who picked the songs, who picked the concept? Was it your concept?
Yeah, no, it wasn't my concept. I had been, Tucker Martine, who produces all of Laura's records and actually is Laura's husband, is a dear friend of mine through the recording process and hanging out, became really good friends, and then just have been fantasizing about a record, you know, and at some point I was just like, well, I'm not going to be able to work with Tucker anymore, I can't really afford him, and he's, you know, he's on another level, yeah, recording, you know, with Peter Buck doing the next Jayhawks album or whatever. But he just called me up one day and was like, hey, you know, we've been talking about doing this record and I have this concept of doing, the concept was like basically it was almost like his story of Nashville songwriters and stuff. And but he was looking through all these songs that he loved and picturing my voice with them. And so it was this classic kind of producer album of gathering these songs that fit fit the feeling. And we took like 30 something songs, you know, of demoing down to 15 or 20 of them that we actually had in the studio to play with, but then we only recorded like 12 of them. So yeah, it was this process of just picking the low lying fruit that was the easiest stuff to pick, and we got our buddies together, Steve Moore. You'll know his name from like Sun, or he plays with Sufjan and Sun and Earth, and he and John Hyde, a wonderful pedal steel player from Seattle, and Eli Moore from Lake, who's a bass player, and Tucker played drums. So it was just a bunch of buds in the studio, and and I was the cheerleader there. I didn't even really play. I just cheered everyone on and then put the cherry on top.
So how long was it sort of a fast record to make or a slow record?
It was pretty fast, yeah. So we just had like two sessions of like one of like 5 days and one of three, I think. And then besides the mixing and maybe one more session of me coming in and redoing a couple vocals. But it was real quick. These are like the Motown folks, you know, they're such heavy players, and they just, you know, they know how to lean into each other and make a vibe and yeah, just create something together. So, and they're deep listeners.
Yeah, I mean, that's really apparent on the record, is that there's a real a lot of atmosphere going on, and everyone's, you know, but it's clever and it's great. It's just deep. I just love this record. So the question is when you go out, are some people expecting some of the older stuff, or some people expecting only some country guy from Nashville? You know, some people who don't know the story of the record.
It's a little like that. I mean, I think mostly people there, I think, follow the story. I mean, there's a real story to this record, which is fun. We've been telling the story everywhere, and I think it's gotten out there of it being like this. You know, I'm basically playing a character in a movie.
Your voice is so rich and deep on this record, and on some of your earlier stuff, you're singing higher, and you're real flexible. Yeah. How did you sort of develop? I mean, were you just born with that, or is that something you had to get talked into, or did you just work on it?
I felt like my voice was just like a pile of clay for a long time. I could kind of do anything with it, but it didn't really have anything of its own for a long time. I think it was in my late 20s even before I was like, hey, I'm starting to feel like I've got my own voice. You know, I felt like a late bloomer for singing. And it's just, but the style that I've developed of just trying new things all the time, I've taken that, kind of to all the instruments I play on and my voice as well. I just keep trying a lot of things, like mimicking other things. I mean, the most wonderful voice I can think of is Milton Nascimento or maybe Nina Simone. Those two voices, I don't know what they do. And I think through mimicking them, somewhat, I'm kind of opening and tapping into what I would do. It sort of feels to me like their voices are like as far as you can take like a human voice into like this, to this beautiful kind of spiritual place. And so I just feel like I'm working towards that. So I'm kind of, and I don't know if I'll get there exactly, but it's like a long process that I'm not, you know, that I'm just going to continue. So I think my voice is probably going to keep changing through the years.
Let me remind everybody, Carl Blau is our guest. He's playing Saturday, October 29th at the Outpost in the Burbs, which is in Montclair, New Jersey, and then Sunday the 30th at the Mercury Lounge in Manhattan. Are you excited to sort of get on the road and get to the fall, see the fall season in the East Coast?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. And my traveling companions, the band Lake from Northwest as well, they're just a kick to hang out with, so I'm excited to get some time with those guys.
So what's next? I mean, how do you follow up introducing Carl Blau?
Well, I've already released another album since then. Last week, I pushed the button. It's just a Bandcamp release, the digital release itself, like, you know, on my own label, Claps, which is that subscription label we were talking about. It's called Raise the Lord, and it's just a kind of electronica record, kind of more similar to like 96 or Dance Positive I've done in the past. The next record I think is going to be more like a band, like kind of like Introducing is, but in trying to bridge the gap between Introducing and my own catalog.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. I mean, you really just have a lot of music in you. I mean, it just, Like you said at the beginning, an obsession. And that's real. That's clear.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm no R. Stevie Moore, but then I mean, maybe I'm the one of the closer things. He's kind of he's amazing.
And he just can't stop. Yeah.
No, I just got another record. Like a notification from, I think, yesterday or the day before, or something, like new album out. It's like, God, that was, you know, like it was a week ago, the last one. But it's pretty extreme compared to most people. I mean, I'm of the mindset to just not look back as much and just try things out. And but then in that style, I think something will happen over time, or is happening over time, that this first thought, best thought, but then honing that to, you know, it's just basically learning how to perform is, you don't get a second chance to have a performance. So, you know, you can approach that with recording of just performing, and then yeah, that's what that happened. That's great. Move on. Next track.
Well, the results are very you know, unusual for what most people are doing now. So it's kind of refreshing to, and, you know, like I said at the beginning, folks, you just need to sort of go listen. The website is klapsclaps.bandcamp.com, and there's over 30 records there for folks to buy or listen to and check out, sink their teeth into.
Yeah, the next thing I put out, last week I also pushed the button on the Bandcamp release, which is like a 90s greatest hits of tapes called Shell Collection. That's on there. It's on the top of that list, the Bandcamp list.
So it's a good sort of a sampler starting place.
Yeah, of like where I came from, yeah.
Okay. We're going to hear the song, the track To Love Somebody from Introducing Carl Blau, which is the first thing that really jumped off to me. And I love the whole thing is great. It's a great song. And a song Nina Simone, I think, did too, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. She did the greatest version. It really never needed to be done again.
Well, it's funny because as soon as I heard your version, I thought of her version. And your version is, you know, I think that's the test for cover songs is do you ever want to listen to them, you know, because the original is usually so good, which is, you know, the Bee Gees version. And some songs,
so good.
Some things lend themselves to, like, you can listen to different readings of a cover and they all have something to say. And sometimes you hear a cover and you go, well, that's good, but I still would always rather hear the original or,
right,
you know,
right.
So you've added to the sort of pool. But, I mean, I love the song, but the thing that put me over the top is the organ solo.
I know. Isn't that the yeah.
What?
I always think that should go on a little longer. It's so good. But it just gives you a little something.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, okay, great. Yeah, it's like just gravy. You know, it's just totally cherry on top. Yeah. It's the best. So you're going to be in Montclair on the 19th and in Manhattan on, not the 19th, the 29th, and in Manhattan on the 30th, Outpost in the Burbs, and then Mercury Lounge. I wish you a lot of luck. And this is, can you tell us just a little something about recording this song or some story?
You know, it's sort of a blur. The story that always comes up with this song to me is not about my recording, but about Barry Gibb, the original recording that Barry and I guess his brother wrote. They actually wrote it for Otis Redding. And then, did you know this story?
I never heard this.
And then he died the week before his studio time was for recording it, which is just so sad to think about. I mean, that would have probably been the epic version, but we'll never know.
Wow, I did not know that. So somewhere in the back of your mind when you're singing it, you're thinking Otis Redding a little bit.
I do. Every time before I start this tune, I get a little flash that never made to fruition. You know, it's just a haunting and it's such a beautiful song.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna hear it now, and we'll see you on the 29th and the 30th. And good luck. Thanks so much.
Super. Thank you so much, Michael. Thank you.
There's a light. Certain kind of light never shines on me. I want my own life to be lived with you, lived with you. There's a way, everybody say, to do each and every little thing. Love somebody, to love somebody the way I love you. In my brain, I see your face again. I'm known my frame of mind. You don't have to be so blind, and I'm blind. I'm a man. Can't you see what I am? I live and I breathe for you. But what good can I do if I ain't got you? Love somebody, love somebody the way I love you. Love somebody, to love somebody.